Why don't you tell us how Mofo is Dead got a start? Tell us how you got that name, too, because it's pretty nice.
Oh, man, the name? Early days of the internet, I discovered the word mofo, and I didn't know what it meant, and then I learnt, and I just thought that's a fantastic word. So I just grew very affectionate of it, and one day decided that that should be the name of a band. But the Is Dead part came when I was just looking for a domain, and there was so many other things called mofo. I don't know, it just popped into my head, Mofo Is Dead.
Nice. Now, one thing I always am intrigued with, why, you know, with bands such as yours, why a three-piece? Why not like a four or a five, get like a second guitar and a keyboard or something in there?
Basically, we can't afford to get any more human beings. it's not really a conscious thing. I don't know, we don't feel like we need anyone else. It just feels good with the three of us.
And sometimes power trios are the way to go, man, depending on what kind of music you're going to write, I think.
Yeah. There's a lot of bands that I love that are three-piece, so.
Mm-hmm. Like Nirvana, Silverchair, Rush. I mean, you could just name off a bunch that are just kick-ass.
Yeah, of course.
So, now, how did you, what was the songwriting process like for Semi-Drop and for Brisneyland?
Pretty much every time we go to write songs, there's just no plan, there's no method, it's just whatever idea one of us has in our head, and then we just start working on whichever one we're vibing at that particular moment whenever we're jamming. But a lot of the ideas are just, you know, in the middle of the day, I'll just something to pop into my head, so I'll put it on my phone and keep it for later. And then when we get together, we just have a listen to a bunch and go, let's work on that one.
Mm-hmm. Now, what's the difference between playing in Mofo Is Dead and your previous act, The Butterfly Effect?
The Butterfly Effect was a band that was already established, and then their singer left, and they were looking for a new singer. And I end up being the guy. But I guess the main difference is I wasn't playing guitar in that band. I was just singing. And the songwriting process was quite different.
So what's that like? I mean, replacing somebody in order to establish band versus starting your own thing?
There was a lot of people, you know, they've got quite a fan base. So I was actually expecting more people to be hating the idea of it, but quite a few people were open to it. But you know, there was the people who were just, you know, it's not the same, and there were the people that were open to whatever the new sound was or the new person was, and some of those people liked it, some of those people didn't.
Now you've got some pretty unique fans in your own. I mean, you've had some pretty nice praises sung on you by the likes of Jimmy Barnes, Matt Sorum, Billy Thorpe, you know, Better Than Ezra, so on and so forth. What's that like, getting critiqued by the guys like that?
It's great when people that you look up to and idolize, you know, think that you're great. It's very inspiring.
You know what the funny thing is, I interviewed Billy Sheehan. To get a compliment out of that guy isn't damn near impossible. I'm serious. Like, I interviewed him for our radio show that we had at the time called Dark Matters, and he, I mean, he is like dead on serious about everything. So, you know, so to hear him compliment some, you know, to get a compliment out of him is great.
Yeah, I didn't even know who he was, because, I mean, I knew of Mr. Big, but I didn't know any of the people in the band, and we were just at a random jam night in Hollywood and just end up jamming together, and I saw this guy play and thought, holy shit, who the hell is this guy? And then obviously I found out pretty quickly who he was.
Nice. Now, you guys were on tour last spring, right? Like a national Australian tour?
Yeah.
Now, what kind of feedback are you getting off the new material?
Mostly great, you know. I don't think anyone would come up to us and tell us they hated it, but it was, a lot of people were genuinely into it. Everyone had different songs. Like, we were playing songs that nobody had ever heard before from Brisneyland, and everyone had different ones that they liked. which was a good sign.
Yeah.
Now, even now with the record, it's the same. Everyone's got a different favorite that I talk to.
Nice. I've got three favorites, actually. I've got Plutocracy, Semi-Drop, and Born Shit Die.
Nice.
I mean, Born Shit Die, just the title alone, I was like, oh, I'm going to love that track, man. You know, but your titles and your lyrics are pretty eclectic. I mean, you know, like I've heard Brisneyland, and it is just constant hook from start to finish. But your titles, I mean, like Plutocracy, Semi-Drop, The Altruist, The Human Condition, Pornography, Born Shit Die. You've got what I think are the most unique titles I've ever heard for songs.
Cool. Thank you, man.
Well, where do you get your inspiration lyric wise? I mean, like, you know, because the lyrics are just as eclectic.
I don't know, man. Just everyday life. Just whatever's pissing me off or, you know, getting me down. But I do consciously try and think of, you know, song titles that I haven't heard before. I hate, you know, songs that are titled after songs I've already heard, you know, the same title, especially when you're shuffling through your iTunes. You got 10 songs with the same name. So I do try to think of a unique title, but I don't really try to make it cool.
Yeah,
just try to think of whatever suits.
Yeah, and then you wonder if they're remakes or not. I hate that too, man.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but yeah, I mean, your wordplay is just astonishing. I mean, they actually make you curious to listen to the song, even if you're not in the mood to listen to anything.
Oh, that's cool.
You know, so if you could pick one song that's your favorite and throw the rest in the fire, what would it be and why?
Off Brisneyland? Oh, man, that's a tough one.
It's like picking your favorite kid, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is, because they're all quite different to me personally in my headspace. But I don't know, probably Plutocracy. I just sort of, I was surprised because I felt like we had to work hard to just make that how it was sounding in my head. And then I went to mix it and it just sort of fell together surprisingly quick. So I don't know, just got really fond of that one. That's why I put it first.
And that's a fun song too. I mean, that's a song that, I mean, I could put on repeat a few times actually.
Oh, cool.
So, well, another thing I like, I love the way the album's mixed, and I love the, what I really like is it sounds like you guys took a lot of time spent on guitar tone, bass tone, drum tone, things like that, which I really like. And being a guitar player myself, what kind of gear are you using?
That's quite amazing that you said that, because we actually didn't spend a huge amount of time on one, you know, miking and everything. They're just, we've spent a lot of time getting our sound for our instruments, you know, but when the recording process came, we didn't spend a lot of time, you know, testing mic positions and all that sort of thing. We just got in a good spot and went, yep, that's it. What do I use? Everything on Brisneyland, I used a Gibson baritone Les Paul.
Oh, nice. Which
came out like 2012. They did a limited run.
That's the 27-inch scale length, right?
It's 28-inch, actually. Yeah. Yeah, they had the bucket head, which was 27-inch, and then the baritone was 28. And most of it was a little Marshall SL5 combo amp with a single greenback speaker in it, which just sounds amazing mic'd up.
Isn't it amazing how combo amps, like smaller amps, actually sound huge in the studio, and it's the heads and the cabs that give you the problems?
Yeah. Well, I've also got an 800 head that is, you know, it's amazing in real life, but there's so much excess frequencies in it that you have to pull out when you're mixing it. But the combo, you just stick a mic in front of it, it sounds great.
Exactly. Now, are you using any effects or anything, or are you running straight through the amp?
Just for all the straight-up distortion sounds, most of it was straight through the amp. There were some parts that were DI from this pedal I use called a Vox Tone Lab, which has got amp simulators in it. It's got some cool different kinds of sounds, you know, put out different frequencies to blend in there.
Now, do you get into reamping at all? Because that's kind of like the latest trend, it seems.
Yeah, not a lot. with plugins or anything like that. I've had a bit of a tinker, but no, didn't really use any of that.
Yeah, because I personally, I think reamping, I don't know. I mean, you're basically DIing your guitar and it's dry, and then you can just go back and just make whatever amp combo you want. But it, I don't know, it kind of sounds cold to me, you know?
Yeah, I haven't really spent enough time experimenting to say whether I like or hate it.
Exactly, exactly.
Whatever gets the result you want, really.
Nice. Now, if you could describe Mofo is Dead, the sound, to somebody who's never heard it before, just your overall, songs and everything else, how would you describe it to someone?
I think the first explanation I had for that question was the best. I'm going to stick with it. A schizophrenic orgy of sonic debauchery.
Nice. Nice. I love it, man. That's the title of the article now. So,
yeah, I don't know. I've just got a really diverse list of influences, so it all sort of melds together. And yeah, I don't know, it's pretty weird.
Do you ever plan on coming to the States? Because I think you'd go really good here.
Of course, we're definitely working on that. Just making a list of which banks to rob, and as soon as we get enough, we're coming.
Nice, nice. Now, is it really that hard to, like, come to the States from another country? Because every time I speak to bands that are outside of the United States, one of their goals is to come to the United States. But I've heard some bands say it's really easy, and I've heard some bands say it's impossible. What do you think on that?
I think it's definitely possible. It just depends on what position the band's in and how much they're willing to sink into it, you know? It's just for us, it's just a matter of money. So, as soon as we get the money together and make it happen, it's going
to
happen.
And do you think it also comes down to, like, maybe knowing a few people, like, over here or something, or?
Oh, for sure, yeah. But, I mean, they're things that can be accomplished, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, most definitely. Now, how does a band of your tenure, because I would actually consider you guys a professional act at this point, in this day and age, in the digital age, do you get your music heard? Not just online, but I'm talking, you know, like getting it on radio, things like that.
Dude, that's my question to the world. I'm still trying to find that answer, but just keep your eyes open and knock on every door and try and talk to every person you can to try and get exposure whatever way you possibly can, you know. We got onto you through our publicist that we're using now, Tim Price. So, you know, he's doing a lot of that door opening for us at the moment, which is great.
Yeah, Tim's a great guy, too.
Yeah.
So, and I think it comes down to, in this day and age, is finding people like Tim and, you know, what he does to get the message out there. Because I think the more time the artist spends away from the music, it tarnishes their own brand, because that's what it comes down to.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's like watching, I don't know, GM build a car and they spend more time on the paint, you know, than they do on the motor.
yeah. But, you know, some bands are lucky. They've got a guy in the band who's just good at that and gifted at talking to people. Unfortunately, none of us are. We're all introverts, so we need someone like Tim.
Yeah. Now, who runs your social media, you know, with you guys being introverts?
Just me. That's why not a lot goes on.
Nice. I mean, well, you know, because that is a valid question, because I get a lot of artists that are just starting out, they're like, well, I can't think of stuff to say every 5 minutes.
Yeah, I totally can relate to that.
You know?
Yeah. I don't know.
and I've had bands I've had bands that'll follow, and then we'll follow them back, and then I'll see in the news feed like, oh, here's a cheeseburger I'm about to eat, and they'll take a picture of it, and it's because they're that hurting for content.
Yeah. See, I can't bring myself to just put mundane shit up there and say stuff that's boring, so that's why I end up saying very little.
Or like quote Keith Richards from 1979 or something like that. Or
yeah.
So, but I think with your lyrical ability, I think you probably come out with some really profane things to say from time to time.
Yeah, well, usually if I, you know, express whatever's on my mind, it comes out pretty dark, so some people don't know quite how to take it, I guess.
Yeah. Now, do you think social media in general has helped the indie community?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, there's so many new ways to discover bands that wouldn't have been able to discover without it.
Because I'm from the 90s. Like, our version of social media was getting a bunch of staple guns and posters, you know?
Yeah.
And, like, just, like, hoping that nobody rips them down and stuff.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, but now, like, literally, you could have 1 million people hear your song 24 hours after it's recorded.
Mm. It's quite amazing.
You know? So, yeah. Let me ask you this. Are you one of the bands that the new artists that are in favor of just plastering your music everywhere on social media, or are you the kind that's more reserved and would want to, like, keep it just on iTunes or not go digital at all?
Not quite on either end of that, but I definitely probably on the latter, like, to keep it a little bit more reserved. I don't know, like, I remember as a kid, there was, you know, there was a bit of a mystery about when bands were going to release stuff, and there was hype for it and everything, whereas, you know, there's so many artists today that just bang, 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 here's a song, and we're doing this, we're doing that. I like a bit of mystique and
build up. Exactly. Well, yeah, a good example of that would be, like, what U2 did last year with their album. If you remember, like, all their albums up to then had a big mystique about it. Like, oh, we're working on it and we're mixing it, blah, blah, you know. But you wouldn't really hear anything until the first single came out. And then, but this last time, it was just like, boom, here it is. And I always felt that kind of cheapened it.
Yeah.
I mean, you could say that album's just as good as their other ones in some spots, but it just kind of made it, you know, like the bastard at a family reunion. you know what I'm saying? It's like, you know, it's like, oh, yeah, nobody appreciates it because we got it for free. And not only that, we woke up to it and it was on our phone.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, I can totally see where you're getting at with that. So, in your opinion, in this new modern age, what is the best way to get yourself out there and get, you know, like, while simultaneously building your brand? Because your band is your brand.
God, I really don't know what the best way is. I mean, I love to play live, but that's probably the hardest way and the most expensive way, well, where we are anyway. I don't know, man. If you figure out the best way, let me know.
Well, I asked Billy Sheehan that, and he said fuck up a bunch of times. He said fuck up a bunch of times and learn from it.
That's easy.
Yeah. I do it all the time. So now, what do you have coming up after the 20th when the EP comes out?
At the moment, we're making a video for Born Shit Die, and we're going to make another video, which we haven't decided which song to make it for. And then we're going to play some live shows at some point, and start working on new songs, because we got a whole bunch of riffs and melodies for new stuff, and we really want to get it happening.
Now, what's it like touring in Australia? Because, like when I think of touring a country, I think of the United States. Like, every 100 miles, there's a major city with 1 million-plus people in it. But, you know, in Australia, you've got, like, a big, like, Martian landscape between Perth and Melbourne, you know?
Yeah.
So,
yeah, that's... I mean, there's really only 5 major cities when you're doing those sorts of tours. There is a lot of regional venues that, you know, bands tend to do. They'll do a city run, and then later on they'll do a regional run and all the places in between. But it's not quite as well set out as America. It's maybe like 300 or 400 miles in between each.
Well, and people don't realize it's not just a country, it's a continent.
Exactly.
You know, and the continents are, like, huge. So, I always wondered that. I mean, because, like Perth is a major place, too, but, like, then you've got all this other stuff on the West Coast, and they're so far away.
Yeah, it's a huge trip for bands on the East Coast to go over to Perth. I mean, you pretty much have to fly. Yeah.
Exactly. So, So where can we find Mofo Is Dead online?
MofoIsDead.com and all the usual places, your faces, your Instagrams, Twitters occasionally.